Our mind is like a river, maybe deep or shallow. And the view is like a valley, maybe wide or narrow. In this life that brings me here, it's my quest to live it without fear, and to find the answers to some questions and carry on.
I guess that was the great Les McCann, one of my favorites, with Let Your Learning Be Your Eyes. That's the title of that song. And it's from his 1975 album, Hustle to Survive. How about that? The very words that we use here very often. Hustle to survive. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we are once again joined with each other a day after a vicious Hurricane Michael ripped through the Florida panhandle, creating incredible amounts of damage. Fortunately, of course, when any one person dies, it's a tragedy, and we had exactly that, one person dying as a result of the storm. But when you think about what it could have been, it is, in fact, a blessing that the damage in terms of lives lost wasn't more extensive. But we had winds up to 155 miles an hour and lots of water being moved around, with a surge of between 7 and 9 feet. Lots of buildings torn apart by the ferocious winds. So now comes the big cleanup. I should note that during all of this, the president didn't skip a beat. He kept his political rally as scheduled in Pennsylvania, and really didn't mention it at all. But that is not a surprise. What I want to talk about today, and this is to ask you to put on your analyst hat. We really haven't come to grips, it seems, with the enormity of the times that we're in. I think part of it is that it's just too overwhelming. And part of it is that we don't quite know what to do. And it has to do with the incredible, this bulldozer of a political resurgence within not just the Republican Party, but a particular section or segment of the Republican Party that has come across to us as being especially mean, especially vicious. These old white men who are commandeering and leading the charge in using the Republican Party, which people used to lift up as the paragon of all that's good in America. You know, good manners, people have a sincere desire to help their fellow man, church-going people, freedom-loving people. But that's not what we've been seeing. We're seeing a particular brand of meanness of spirit. And as they get older, it seems, they get meaner. They get more and more hateful. They get absolutely no, they give no quarter at all to what used to be looked at as the preferred way of doing things, which is you work it out. But their plan is utter and complete destruction. They're not interested in whatever rules apply and whether they should observe them. Excuse me. They don't have very much time, but they are very aware that they are positioned at this time in at the crosshairs of incredible power. So we are seeing also a denigration of their own standards, or at least what they used to hold up to the rest of us as their standards. They have no respect for their fellow citizen. They have no respect for the law. This is a group of renegades. And if we thought that the Democrats were greedy, the Republicans, this brand, this group of Republicans have put them to shame. And the machine is picking up speed. Well, I used to like to say that things that pick up speed tend to be going downhill, but this is not following that rule at all. They're picking up speed and inspiring new generations to act the way they act, to be ruthless and obsessive about their interests. And in pursuit of those interests, to feel comfortable about doing whatever it is you have to do to get to the finish line. That's a new philosophy. Not that it's, you know, all new. But this brand of Republicanism is frightening people because it seems to be a mutant strain that was laying low for many years. And under the aegis or leadership, if one could use that word, of Donald Trump and of his ilk, we have a fast rise within our midst of this phenomenon of a party that is hell-bent on destruction. As long as they win, quote-unquote, as long as they get what they want, as long as they achieve their objectives, everything is in the mix. Cronyism, I mean, not even regular cronyism. We suffered through that with the Democrats. But an extraordinary kind of cronyism. It's in your face. Thievery, corruption, the abrogation of any obligation to observe the Constitution. They don't care. And we just came through that period, a period in which all these points were made very clear, and that was the appointment of Brett Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court, the nominee of Donald Trump, and the beneficiary of this new style Republican largesse by others in the party. I don't think people are saying this out loud, but the people who customarily, you know, they're involved in observing the political scene, they're scared. Not because they're weak, not because they're afraid to engage, but they're scared about the awesomeness of this political machine and what it has been able to do in a short time, how dedicated it is to a philosophy that we used to hear objections to. We used to hear people condemning this kind of behavior. That's not to say we didn't have corruption and cronyism and bribery and all these other things. But it is something to see and to really grapple with at this level and so pervasively as to make you feel completely helpless. This is a juggernaut. And like most juggernauts, the whole idea is to paralyze you with their awesome power and effect, how far-reaching it is, how deep it is, how wide it is. But mostly, how you can't do anything about it but submit to defeat, submit to its awesome power. That's where we are. Other countries have been, you know, keeping tabs on how the United States is doing. They're terrified too. They've never seen anything like this. And the manner of doing things and the sentiments harbored by this new brand of republicanism is spreading to their countries as well. In some cases, very openly, as resurgence of Nazism and fascism. And it's coming face to face with values that people were beginning to reintroduce to society as the preferred way of doing things. They're not interested in having talks. They're not interested in negotiating. They're not interested in your thoughts and opinions. They're not interested in our definition of what nationalism is and how we are to operate as a country. They're not interested in these silly ideas. They have their own. So, keenly aware of the dire social, political, and economic situation in the United States, I'm asking that we present to each other today for consideration workable ideas for increasing authentic, sustainable power of the people. That is to say, how do we strategically grapple with this question, this complete, this fractionated way of operating as citizens at the highest levels even, and dare we Well, I don't even know that we should even consider this a good question. I just think that it should be automatic. We should not accept it. It is not acceptable. And in the end, it comes down to the intention of depriving us, the people, of our rights to direct the government, to have a say as to when it should stop, when it should go, to have access to the throttle and brake. We have no access. Increasingly, we have no access. And we can see where we're heading. The question today is, what do you think should be our response even now? What should we be doing and thinking in terms of a strategic plan to affirm our rights, our natural rights? Remember, we talked about the difference between natural rights and, you know, civil rights. I'm talking natural rights. So do some thinking and start putting your brains in gear. We'll take this little break. And when we come back, I'm expecting that we will be having some serious talk about where we are. It's not really at this point important to discuss how we got here. I think we generally have an idea, or many ideas about that. But let us look instead at how do we operate from now on, seeing positive, seeing proof of where this administration and possibly future administrations will be going, what it means for our rights, and do we just accept it? Right after this, and your calls at 888-874-4888.
Brings me here. It's my quest to live it without fear. Yeah, and to find the answers to some questions and carry on.
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and we're talking today about, what do we put together? What kind of strategy do we put together to cope with what we know is coming, what we see is already here, but we know more is coming? What is a good strategy? Something that is workable, that in some way restores our rights to be authentic citizens, having a say in the ways things are going. Khalil from South Carolina, you start us off today.
Good afternoon. How are you doing today?
Pretty good, Khalil. How about you?
Trying to stay dry.
You know? I could imagine. You got a little bit of the tail end of the storm. The hurricane,
yeah.
I should say. Yeah.
I've been thinking about this since maybe you've been prodding us to think about self-sufficiency. In my opinion, that's what I've been seeing for maybe over the past few months. So anyway, I would look to history. You know, when I was a little kid, they were kind of on their way out, but they were still around. It was an organization. You know, it was a co-op. It was called Weaver's Way. And that got a lot of people interested in kind of doing, like-minded people doing their own thing together. So, that, in other words, that's an easy way for everyone to start. Because what happens is that when you're in a co-op, you end up being around like-minded people who have the same objectives that you might have. And then you can get your food, quality food, at a lower price. And then when you get insert yourself inside the type of organization, what happens is that you might find yourself looking at history and looking at the party for self-defense. Because what they in fact did is when they figured out that the system was working, not even for them, but against them, what they did is took things into their own hands. So, you know, they took the education for their children into their own hands. They took health care into their own hands because there were doctors who were sympathetic to the movement. They took security into their own hands because in that way, of course, people were being oppressed through the authorities. And affordable housing. And it's interesting because history, you see what happened to them. You know, folks are still around, but a lot of folks are political prisoners because they took matters into their own hands. Okay? But we have to fight because that's what happened to Haiti. What do you think Haiti is like bottom rung? Okay, I'm not going to go off on a tangent, but the system really does not want us to take control of our destiny. Is what my point is. Because you look at Haiti, they threw off the yoke of colonialism early on, and they never recovered. So I'm not trying to beat a dead horse, but you know, in my mind, history shows me that, and it indicates to me that. Now, fast forward to the party for self-defense. So, and if I'm not mistaken, even Head Start mimicked. Either one of the other was an impetus. And maybe they work together because we still deal with Head Start. We understand that children cannot learn without the proper nutrition. So, I mean, that's my best thought now because this is a coup. We're undergoing a coup. And the more I think about this coup, it's really uncanny because every branch of government has been taken over. That's what I see. So you asked about solutions and I tried to stay out of history because you know me. But
when you say this is a coup, could you elaborate a bit more on that? Give us an idea as to why that particular word is used by you to describe the current condition.
Well, we have a minority, a politically philosophical minority that has taken over the majority of the political process in America. They have every branch of government, including the Supreme Court, including the newest Supreme Court justice, who is openly and clearly a bought and paid for judge, exactly what a judge is not supposed to be. And the president is a fascist. I mean, there's no way around that. And I'm really offended. Honestly, these folks that we look at on the news, most of these folks have degrees, most of them. A couple of older folks don't, and they have good jobs, but I won't get into that. But they should know history. And if you look at Trump, it's like he has melded himself between Mussolini and Hitler. His rallies look like Klan rallies or Nazi rallies. And in fact, that's who attends these rallies. And he openly operates like a fascist. Like you said, it's in your face. And see, people don't even understand what fascism is. And one word, a one sentence definition would be emerging a political philosophy in corporate America. And if you look, it's all about deals. And so, but this fits into that mantra that the people who support this administration think, well, he's a businessman. But if you really think what a business person does is that they do anything they can to make a profit at any cost, and anyone they hurt along the way, well, take me to court. That's what tort law is about, and that's the way our system is set up. That's what LLCs are about. It protects the company, but, you know, not the person. The person doesn't lose their assets. And that's what a business person does, and they'll cut corners or do anything. That is not the purpose of the government for and by the people. So anyway, it's a coup because we have this radical element. This radical element. And it's just uncanny. These people have taken over and been hoodwinked, but this is in the shift toward the Eastern European, you see, because it's about blaming the other. And see, people have forgotten. We have a Russian spy, our authorities in custody, Butina, who has infiltrated herself with the NRA. And who was really, really the demographic of the NRA is, you know, white folks, evangelicals that love to go to church with their guns in their truck. They swear they're Christians, but they hate black folk and they hate brown folk and go away. We had enough of you. But we love God and we love Jesus and all that. And we love the Russians because they're white like us. I mean, that's the condensed version, but that's what's going on. Because we have white supremacists in the White House. And when is the president doing his job? He's out here rallying. When is he being president? The white supremacists in the White House, John Kelly, his other advisors, that's who's running in the business. That's who's running the White House. So that's why it's a coup. But the saving grace, maybe the courts can save us now, maybe they won't. We don't know. But that's why we have to take care of ourselves. And we see the writing is on the wall. It's been on the wall. But now it's just, forget about it. Forget about it.
This strategy that you're outlining and the points that you're making, how doable do you think these things are?
It's very doable. And I'll say it like this, and that's why I started off talking about the co-op. The co-op that I talked about was probably as old as I am. I think the inception was around the same time I was born. They're still around. They grew. And like I said, that's what it takes. You need what's called in sociology a critical mass of folk to get anything done. One or two people jumping up and down, that's not going to cut it. And what happens is that when you get a critical mass of folks from different walks of life, people bring different skill sets to the table. Doctors, whatever. You know, it doesn't have to be a profession, but everyone can bring something to the table. And then what happens is that you use IPA, which is infiltrate, proliferate, and assume control. Then we take over the Democratic Party with like-minded folk, like the woman running for governor, maybe. We'll see what happens in Georgia. But we had to weed people out, because what happens is that, you know, you had a question weeks ago about politics politics and corruption. Maybe it wasn't. It was politics and society. But you know, there's politics anywhere. If we live on an island with 20 people, people will figure out who's in charge and who's not. And at some point, many human beings succumb to greed and you know, foibles. And that's where the corruption comes in. But politics is always going to be there. We're always going to deal with politics. You know, that's just schmoozing. It's the corruption. The corruption is what has ruined the system. And that's what Sheldon Whitehouse was talking about. And I don't know, did he cover this fact of Kavanaugh's finances? It's very disturbing.
That's coming, because I know there are some news organizations that are working on that aspect. So we'll see. But Khalil, you started us off in fine form. There should be some serious thinking going on about what you've offered us today. Thank you so much. From Orlando, Tony, you're on the air.
Hi, Yatrice. Thanks for taking Hello. My call.
Thanks for calling in.
I kind of get repetitive with this whole white supremacist subject, but this is what we have. You know, we have a white supremacist system. One thing going forward, I know, and it can be a delicate situation for some because it is an identity issue, something that I propose. Because one of the cards that white supremacists have over the rest of us is that they call themselves Americans. Okay, whenever you refer to a white person, okay, that's supposedly from this country, you will say, well, that's an American. Now, if you're a black American, they will call you either black American, African American. If you're Hispanic, they call you a Latino, Hispanic American. It's all of these secondary versions of an American. And I take offense myself personally when I'm asked what my race is in this country whenever I fill out applications, because I believe it's none of their business what my race is, because if they're going to say that all men are created equal, then it should be it should make a difference what my race is. So whenever I fill out paperwork and things like that, I always leave that blank. And when the census comes around...
What I want you to do is to get close to the subject at hand. What you're saying is relevant, but I want you to really go straight at the subject. What do you think is a workable, strategic plan to devolve power back to the people? Is it possible? Will it even work?
Well, the power, you have to take it yourself. This is my point. You have to take the power yourself. You can't let them label you. Now, like I said, I know it's something that people can... I mean, maybe a lot of people don't understand where I'm coming from, but what my point is that the Democrat Party, okay, has basically created this, well, both parties play this whole identity politics game, but the problem is that Republicans supposedly say that they're not for identity politics. So if they're not for identity politics, then you got to throw it right back at them and basically say, well, then don't treat me like a second-class citizen. You know, and like a while ago, I think I called last Friday and I asked you about the Dred Scott decision, and as it has been overturned, those are very important social topics that we need to be talking about today, because those are topics that need to be those are the type of issues that we need to talk about, because we're not 100% there, you know, as far as having our rights, you know, written down in legislation. You know, because as long as those things are still, determined the way they were determined at that time, we're still living in the 1800s, you know. So if
I were to ask you, I mean, you're outlining things that have happened already, and although people are objecting to them and working on solutions, the idea is it will take time. We have already been served notice that we are practically out of time to get done whatever it is we want to get done. So how do we build a plan of action considering that we are short on time and we have so many things to take care of? What is your suggestion as to how we prioritize?
I'm not of the belief that we are in short of time. Okay, we're not in short of time. I'm in the belief of we need to keep fighting forward. Do not give up. We are an American just as anybody else is an American in this country. The only true legitimate Americans, if there are one, are the natives that were, and even they were immigrants from Eurasia. But the thing is that. We can't feel like we've lost everything. okay, just because of the recent headline on the television screen. We're here. We're alive. We have to keep fighting for our rights. You know, and like I said, part of that has to do with self. Self-worth. And say that, no, you're not going to label me, because my son came home yesterday with some homework, and they talked about social structures. And so I said to him, well, there's the rich, the poor, and the middle class. And he said, no. I'm talking about slavery and rulers and whatnot. That's what he was saying to me. So I guess they were talking about some other kind of subject in school. So I felt like, you know, they're trying to keep you down. Even in the school system, the way they talk to you about certain stuff, they try to keep you down in a certain way, and you got to be able to not be a victim. It's that whole victim. Is you cannot feel as if you're in a victim, and that's what I believe, you know. And but that is something that you have to throw back in the face of the Republicans to take away that card that they have, because we are seeing that. We are seeing that the Eastern European, the Anglo-Saxon.
But they have an advantage that we do not now have, and that is a structure. They have plans. They have a hierarchy of leadership. They
yes.
have priorities. And it's
yes.
very, very hard to do all these things at the same time in terms of fighting back. So we have to have some kind of a strategy, it seems to me, as to how we move. We got a suggestion from Khalil about, accentuating cooperative life, you know, cooperative action. That's a very good suggestion. One sentence, tell us what you would recommend as something that we should seriously consider?
In one sentence, I will say that you, like I said before, you have to see yourself as an equal, first and foremost, than a white supremacist, okay? Just because the color of their skin does not mean that they are better than you. Because, see, when you go into these ideas as far as creating co-ops and things like that, those are all fine and dandy, but that's not going to change the whole thing, because that's just going to be a localized event. We have to change ourselves.
Even so, it might be a very effective way to start. If you're going to take on the whole thing, the question is, do you have the resources to do it? Do we have the time to do it? Do we have a way of defending what we're doing? But maybe you start where you can. As I said, you work with what you have, and you trust what you know. Thanks so much for calling and contributing today, Tony. Bruce from New Jersey, from New York, sorry. You're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice.
Hello.
You know where I go with this all the time, you know? I don't think there's much that we can do to change anything, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't try, right? But I think it may be better to accept our fate, you know. But there's something wrong with your question. Your question presupposes that this country was ever democratic or anything like that, you know. I think that is wrong. I think that is a faulty assumption, right? I think it's an imprecise to say that this country was ever democratic. I don't see democracy as its best is an economic system where you have, you know, fairly equal distribution of wealth and that kind of thing, right? And I don't see a system where you give somebody your power, and then they decide to suppress you or to structure an economy in such a way that we have the types of distributions of wealth that we have now. You know, and if democracy is about economics and not politics, right? Okay, so the foolishness is about politics, and then they quietly go around and distribute, you know, wealth in certain ways, right? Okay. Like how the Congress functions, for instance, and yeah. So I think it's a faulty assumption that that this country was ever democratic, that we have any rights to ever get back, you know. I think there's been a trick all the time. Well, let's think that this country is a country that supported Nazi Germany, you know, up until 1943. The same elites who are in power now, Donald Trump and his ilk, the people who have money, who have power, who don't have any objections to what's happening in society about the rise of fascism. I mean, this is what they want, you know. We had a case in this country where the military was trying to overthrow a president, right? You know, because they wanted to institute this type of thing and have alliances with you know, you know this, and sometime around 1945, right? And these people are basically doing by stealth what they failed to do in around 1945, circa. I think it's a misnomer to state that that we have any rights, democratic rights, to get back. I don't think we ever had any rights. And any system where you vote for people, right, you give your power to them, and then they do what they feel like and serve their interests, and you have to be running around calling and emailing and senators and that type of thing, to my mind, is a sophisticated form of slavery. It's not democratic, you know, in the best traditions of democratic. So your question may be... erroneously characterized.
Just the same, I accept your criticism. I don't agree, but I accept it. But
yeah, okay.
what I want to remind you of is that all these things that you have just enumerated, notwithstanding, how do we as a group, black, white, polka dot, but as a group, clearly being targeted, how do we work at devising some kind of a system of our own that gives us a shot at our own power, using our own power to protect our turf?
Yeah, well, I don't think it's possible. It was never possible in the best of times, and I don't see how it's going to be possible in the worst of times. I think we have to accept or fit and maybe hope that empire collapses, and in the collapse of empire, maybe there may be space created for that type of thing. But I don't think it's possible while empire is still at its apogee, you know. I don't see it possible. You know, there will have to be a collapse of the ruling systems in this country in order for the emergence of that type of thinking, of that type of that, creating the space for that type of you know, social discourse. But as long as empire is what it is, and they're taking away your rights every day. I mean, on the media, I mean, wherever you look, they're taking away your rights. So they're making it less and less possible to do that. That can only happen in a state of confusion where central government fails, where there's maybe anarchy, coming out of anarchy. But I don't see that we can go. For instance, look, we had Martin Luther King and we had this civil rights epoch and all kind of thing. But all these things have been rolled back, you know, by people that you are supposed to be electing. So we are still talking about things like, like post-slavery conditions and that type of thing. So these people never intended, you know, they pretended they're going to make some progress. But then as soon as they get a chance, they just roll back, you know, to what they want, right? So we are back to where we were before. It's not going to happen, I feel.
You don't see any evidence at all of progress from these struggles.
Yeah, I see progress limited progress. You know, I see people, and I have the deepest respect for people who put their lives on the line, who did all the stuff, you know. But when you can elect people and they can roll back these things, you know, I mean, they've been rolling back these things systematically over decades, right? When you have a government that's intent on doing that, it tells you the truth, what they want to be, the kind of system they want, that they want a slave system instead of a system where, we can have justice and equality and that type of thing, you know. I'm not convinced that, you know, that the ruling elites in this country ever wanted that.
You sound a bit fatalistic.
Of course I am. Yeah, I'm a nihilist, you know. I'm a nihilist, you know. I have no objection. I don't want to be. I call you because I want to be convinced not to be, right? Okay, but all the analyses I'm doing, they're pointed in the same direction. What kind of impulse could you have in the country for people to elect Donald Trump, for instance, or even have to choose between Trump and Clinton? You know, I mean, what kind of country could you have when the country can decide that these are the best that we can do, and when you have so much
corruption? But then, on the other hand, I could make the case that there were systems that could have been activated to prevent the eventual election of Donald Trump and, you know, the people of his ilk. But we fell down on the job. People did not make these systems that were capable of changing things. They did not pay attention to them. They did not make them accountable. They did not support some of the struggles that they should have supported and built community.
I don't want to blame people in that way, although I think the population collectively has to, you know, to reap the fruits of what we have become, right? But I don't necessarily want to blame people in that way, because when you have a system that gives power, you expect people to do things, you know, and they do something or the opposite. I mean, it's difficult to blame the people. You have to blame the system. I think it's better to blame the system. That we have a systemic problem instead of a people's problem, per se.
All right. Well, thou hast spoken. So we'll see how people react to what you offered us today, Bruce. Thanks so much for calling in. Beatrice from New York, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yes, what I feel is going on is how we can rise up and do better, I think, is through economics. Because, as you know, that in the past, whenever there were black towns that became independent of them and became and started bringing and establishing their own businesses, and they started doing very well, independent of the Caucasian man, what did they do? They came in and they destroyed them. So I think that is one of the biggest things, or the biggest fear that they have, is that we become economically advantaged, that we learn how to do for ourselves independent of them, because you cannot be controlled when you know how to take care of yourself, and they know that. That's why you don't see too many black businesses anywhere. It's all about control. If they can keep us down like they're doing now, they will continue to control us. But the moment we all start establishing our own businesses, and it doesn't even have to be a brick and mortar. It could be, you know, becoming a writer or selling online. Anything.
Well, these are good ideas. But are you not noticing that this situation is not unique to African Americans or Latinos, but to a whole class of people who are being targeted by the government as being, you know, there was this thing about Hillary Clinton calling them the deplorables. And that includes many whites, working class whites, poor whites. All kinds of people are now lumped into this burgeoning category of people who do not have, people who are targeted, people who are being even more oppressed by a government just to prove a point, with the philosophy that, you know, they choose to have the government do for them what they ought to be doing for themselves. They refuse to lift themselves out of poverty. It's a line that's working very well. We have today the phenomenon of whites detesting certain other whites because the philosophy has been propagated so effectively that they are now, we now see within white America cleavages that we didn't see before. Not to this extent.
Well, my thing is they are also focusing on them as well, is because a lot of them are like us and they understand. They're beginning to realize what's really going on. And they're sympathizing with us. And the country, the government, does not like that. That's why they're doing what they're doing. So now their thing is, well, we're just going to tear them down too.
What would you suggest as a workable idea that people should begin to consider? Just, you know, run around in their minds to bring them to an awareness first of what our shared condition is, and then some ideas about how best to tackle the issue, because it's getting worse. It's getting more and more rigorous, and the administration and certainly the president more and more outlandish.
Well, I think churches, they can start getting some of their members together and asking them what do they suggest? Do they have any ideas? And have this like a maybe a monthly thing. And then writing these ideas down and then starting to put them in place. Churches, schools, the same thing. People come together when they bring their kids to school, talking to other parents, say, let's sit down and talk about this and see how we can get around this. So what I'm trying to say is that it should be put out there for all of us, like one big message that this is what we should do. Break up in small groups, sit down and talk about it. See what we can do in terms of helping people to get their, maybe their diplomas, start a small business. And also, one of the most important things is teaching their children while they're young how to become independent and become a small entrepreneur. There are some parents who could sit down and write a children's book that talks about finances and how they can start teaching their children about finances, but in a, you know, in a fun way. You know, because I think teaching children too is very important.
It's very important, but we have to ritualize these things. We have to make them, you know, when I was growing up, at the age of 7, you know, we didn't discuss it as a ritual, a family ritual. But at the age of 7, I'll tell you what I got as my birthday gifts. I got a bank book, and my mother put $5 in my bank book to start me off, and I got a passport. Because they knew that I would have to leave the country, as all 9 of their children eventually had to do. So that was a way, and on Saturdays, my father held these talks with all of us, and we thought he was so unkind. But the idea was that he created a ritual My parents created these rituals at seven. Those were my gifts. My passport and a bank book with $5 in it. And basically the lesson was, your passport means that you are going to have to leave this country at some point. And your bank book means that you have to learn how to save every penny you can. Right? Well, of course, I wish I continued that kind of thinking even now. the idea is that children, their minds are open, but we don't have, we've lost our way somehow. And although Bruce had said he didn't want to blame anybody, neither do I. I don't want to blame people, but I do want people to become conscious that even in small ways, you're shaping people's minds. Even in a small thing, like my mother holding my hand, taking me down to the bank, and putting $5 in my account. And the instruction is, whatever you have as, quote, loose change, unquote, you know where you're going to have to put it. So I agree with you that things have to start out in that way, that where we resume the teaching that we know. Again, these are things that have been passed down to us, and they're so logical to do. We have to revive those customs because they're very important in shaping people's mentalities and shaping their outlook. So thank you so much for calling, Beatrice. It was wonderful to hear from you. And that brings us to the end of our program today. I love the idea that people are thinking about things. We don't have to agree. We just have to start thinking. Thanks so much. We see each other tomorrow for Free Your Mind Friday. Bye-bye.
A mind is like a river, maybe deep or shallow, and the view is like a valley, maybe wide or narrow. In this life that brings me here, it's my quest.